We are Two Guys Gaming.
Hello and welcome, even though we're under the Two Guys Gaming banner. This is One Guy Reading, Dragons of Deceit by Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. You found Noob's Book Club, whether you meant to or not. I've been reading the book, and as you usually do with a book club, I've been giving a synopsis of each chapter, and then afterwards I give my thoughts about the chapter. This is episode 5. We're up to chapter 7. This should have been released on Friday for those of you who have been listening, but you know that my schedule has been shaky at best. This weekend has been crazy with everything that we've had to do. I'm just now getting set down to record this. But I did already read and take notes on chapter 8. Hopefully tomorrow at soccer I'll be able to do chapter 9 and 10. That'll get us back on schedule for this week. I did want to finish up book 1, which is 8, 9, and 10 this week. And we should be able to do that. Okay, without any further ado, on to chapter 7. The Siege of Rosethorn is... it's off. The people of the castle and the village find little solace unless... of a reason to celebrate. Even though the enemy retreated, many died, the dragon caused much damage to the castle, and the battle all but decimated the village. So they clean as well as they can, bury their dead, and burn the bodies of the goblins. In war, is there ever really a victor? I don't mean to get too philosophical with you there, but I'll just leave that there. During the cleanup, a messenger arrives with good tidings, the Battle of the High Claris Tower. Oh my god, did they just say that? Is one. However, the messenger brings no news of Gregory. Another, one who rode into battle with him, returns, mortally wounded, and with news. Now I'm about to take a dramatic pause. Gregory fought valiantly, but ultimately died in battle. Atieno falls prone. Destina comes to the horrible realization that she now rules the castle and the village. Unable to fully realize it, though, she instead gives some vague commands and attempts to get more information. Atieno is taken to her bedroom to grieve. Destina learns that her father had a chance to come home, but instead he stayed. He made friends with another knight and felt a duty to remain back to help his friend and fellow soldier. That soldier dies defending the tower with the Dragonlance. Wait, what? And Gregory rises to take his place. The casual name drop, that soldier. Another dramatic pause. Dun dun dun! Stern Brightblade. Yep, that's Stern Brightblade. The same one from the original trilogy. The name means little to Destina, of course, but she curses him lightly for playing a part in her father's death as she sees it. Destina, armed with this information, goes to her mother's room and, after making sure she's okay, absolutely loses her shit. She's moving through these steps of grief pretty quickly, I imagine, all the way to anger. After the argument, Destina apologizes before retiring into her father's library/study. She finds a book her father was studying before the battle, a biography of Huma with an impossibly long title that I think might have been written by a one Tasselhoff Burfoot, although I couldn't find it in my research. I couldn't find if it's actually written by Taz. I'm sure it is because of the title. It's like 17 words long and I can't remember, and I don't feel like going to get the book right now. In the book, she reads of a powerful artifact that allows the wielder to travel back in time. And we have our hook. So, my thoughts about this chapter. First off, I got a holy shit moment a few chapters ago, chapter 4, but this chapter was an entire holy shit moment. First, Gregory dies. A shock, sure, but somewhat expected and necessary for the story and Destina's arc. Right? Mom, dad always has to die, even though this isn't a Disney movie. More importantly, I got verification of a few things. One, this book takes place during the War of the Lance, at least this part did. I suspected as much, but now I definitely know. Second, that means I was right to think that the book had the feel of a requel. And honestly, I never know how to feel about these things. Sure, I mostly enjoy it when a franchise from my childhood reinvents itself and lets me share that joy in a new way with my kids. Going to see A Force Awakens with my kids and my father-in-law, that remains one of the greatest moments of the last decade or so, as far as family goes. It was just fun to be there with them, and it was good to be able to share that with them. Plus, as a struggling and somewhat, say, failed writer, I find the good and what creative projects. Now, with all that being said, these always feel like a cheap way to exploit our nostalgia. I never liked that. I remember back when the Woodstock 90 whatever hit, and I was working at Yankee Candle at the time, and I was talking with some people at Yankee Candle, And they were talking about the Woodstock, whatever. And, you know, as you do, you're like, oh, are you going to go see it? Or are you going to go watch it? Or are you going to go there? And I just, at the time, it's when I came up with my term, forced nostalgia. I'm sure it wasn't my term. I'm sure I heard it somewhere. But that's just what Woodstock 90, whatever, felt like. It felt like, hey, you heard your parents, you heard your grandparents talk about Woodstock, and you want to be a part of it, right? Don't you, kids? Don't you want to have this experience that your parents all had, this collective experience that your parents all had? And ultimately, what it was just about was, obviously, it was just about making money. It was just about pushing the narrative. It was just about, it got into the wrong hands. I watched the docuseries about the Woodstock reboot. I saw that it got into the wrong hands, and it ended up just being about the money. It wasn't about the feel of Woodstock anymore. Maybe initially it was, because one of the guys who was originally involved in Woodstock was actually involved in the reboots, and it felt like he was trying to bring some of that into our lives at the time, but it ended up just being about the money, and it just ended up being about making as much as possible, which much in the society does. And it's unfortunate, because I feel like maybe it could have been something better than that. Maybe it could have been something that united us as a generation, but ultimately what it ended up doing is just confirming our generational sort of madness, for lack of a better word. The, you know, Generation X is known for our sort of disdain of most things, and at the very least, we're just kind of like, eh, it happened, it's whatever, life goes on, right? Point is that I never know how to feel about these things initially, especially Star Wars. For some reason, Star Wars was when it really hit me that basically what they were doing with these projects was they were just taking something old, repackaging it as something new, but basically reselling the story. When I think it was partially because I wrote the article for the webpage way back when for Force Awakens, and as I was making these connections, as I was watching it through more of a critical eye, I was like, wait, this feels like this happened before. This feels like this happened before. This all feels very familiar. And that's when I really started to pay attention, and that's when it kind of came to me that, oh yeah, Creed is kind of a retelling of Rocky almost. You know, some of these other things. Scream, of course, because they're meta. They came right out and said it. They said, look, this is what they're doing to you. They're taking these old things. They're repackaging them as new. They're preying on your nostalgia and your good feelings that you had back when you saw these movies the first time around. And they're partly probably trying to pull in a new audience, because the parents will take their kids to these movies and they'll say, oh, these were great movies when I was younger. You know, you'll love them as well. And that's what happened with Star Wars, although my kids were into Star Wars before then because I was watching the old movies with them. And actually, it's funny, the younger generation for them, because the prequels were the new movies and they're the flashier movies, quote unquote, and they're the ones with the better special effect, quote unquote, and all that sort of stuff. Those have become the movies for my kids that they think of when they watch Star Wars. Like Aiden even said when we were watching the movies over the summer, rewatching the movies over the summer, he even said that he thought that the prequels were better than the originals. And in some ways, I have to agree with him. Again, the original movies have that nostalgia and they have that feel to it. But aside from that, I think that the prequels also have some good things to them. Although I will go to my grave saying that the middle one, the second one, Attack of the Clones, is the worst Star Wars movie that has ever been made and will ever be made. I don't like that one at all. But even rewatching that one, I found some things that was like, okay, maybe this movie isn't as bad as I thought it was, but it's still pretty, pretty bad. In the case of this one, I feel pretty good about revisiting the Kryn of my childhood. Well, my teenhood, actually, technically. All of these characters hold a special place in my life. Even more than Star Wars, I related to these characters like Raistlin and Tannis on several different levels. Raistlin especially, until he's crazy, murderous streak, of course, was a character that I related to on a deep level. I never went so far as I saw some in World of Warcraft and named my character after him, but I cried in Legends when he died. And even reading it now, with the attachment of my kids to it, I can see it from a father's point of view, and it still chokes me up. You know, that the whole brotherly connection and Caramon being there for Raistlin all the way to the end, even in spite of all of the bad that Raistlin, Fist and Antilus ended up doing. So overall, I'm glad to have them back in my life. Even as only side characters in Destina's arc, I welcome them with open arms. Glad to have you back, guys. That was Chapter 7. Again, as always, I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you're reading along, you can find us at twoguysgaming.com. That's where you can find all of our information. You can find our Instagram. You can find our Facebook. You can find our Twitter. You can find our virtually non-existent YouTube at this point, and our Twitch. Although I said starting in March, I'm going to try to start to put together content for the YouTube and possibly the Twitch. I hope you guys enjoyed this. As I said, I already read chapter 8, so I should be able to record that and get that up possibly tomorrow, but most likely Wednesday. Maybe I'll just record it now so that I can just post it tomorrow. And you'll get a couple of episodes in a couple of days. Thanks for listening, and I will see you next time with chapter 8. Bye, guys.
We are.